Chapter 34.
Planet Sunnest. Day 3 of the Siege of Inusutor.
The senior squad leaders finished passing on Namir's new plan. The plan he'd hastily composed with the rebel cell the previous night, refined in the back of his brain during the long trek up the mountainside, and finally detailed in his too short meeting with Twilight's command staff, just as the first wave of the Imperial attack began. He watched the assault from his position atop the facility spire, macro binoculars clutched against the rising wind. A few hundred meters below, a ring of Imperial stormtroopers was climbing slowly upward, ranks closing, as armored figures scrabbled over obsidian. Imperial airspeeders whipped about the mountaintop in increasingly swift passes, taking quick shots with their blaster cannons at retreating Twilight scouts. Twilight Company's own forces were divided into three rough lines between the Imperials and the processing facility. The outermost line consisted of little more than a few dozen troops stationed in fire teams behind boulders and in crevices, anywhere the landscape would provide concealment. The outer line couldn't possibly hold for long, but a few bloody ambushes of Imperial forward infantry would make the foe cautious. The middle line, halfway between the facility and the outer line, was entrenched in a narrow ditch the company had expanded from natural breaks in the stone. The trench would provide cover while, Namir hoped, reducing the effectiveness of the Empire's bombers. It was close enough to the facility that heavy ordnance might damage the structure, something the Imperials still seemed determined to avoid. Almost a third of the company was positioned on the middle line, along with a smattering of portable artillery, swivel-mounted blaster cannons, mortars, and light missile launchers. The third and innermost line encircled the facility's perimeter. The inner line resembled, in both form and function, the defense the Empire had erected during Twilight's own invasion. It had worked well then, and it would work well for the Rebellion. Another third of the company occupied positions there, and the remainder of the company's artillery had been placed on the line as well. If the enemy made it past the inner line to the facility entrances, the time for heavy weaponry would be over. It was a formidable defense, all told, capitalizing on the two advantages Twilight Company possessed. The terrain would give the company higher ground and shelter while slowing the enemy considerably, leaving opposing troops vulnerable to sustained fire. The Empire's continued reluctance to simply obliterate the processing facility was key as well. If enemy commanders chose to cut their losses and sacrifice the facility to rid Sallust of the rebel presence, the tide of battle would turn in a moment. Neither advantage changed the fact that Twilight Company was outnumbered 10-1, or that the stormtroopers were better equipped, better trained, and better rested than Twilight had ever been. The horde of white-clad enemy soldiers seemed to cover the Dark Mountain like snow, separated by wedges of black-clad, lightly armored Imperial fleet troopers. Giant, vaguely insectoid forms hobbled behind the masses, occluded by clouds of yellow dust without the enhancement of Namir's macro binoculars. Two-legged Imperial AT-ST walkers. Namir suspected that only the difficulty of the slope prevented the Empire from deploying the four-legged behemoths it had used on Hoth. Twilight Company had fewer troops, fewer vehicles, and no air support to speak of. It had nowhere to retreat, aside from the facility itself. There was every possibility the engagement would result in a slaughter. Yet Namir found himself unafraid, even for the soldiers under his command. There were worse ways to die than fighting to defend one's comrades.
"That Star Destroyer is approaching the planet," Hober said.
Namir had chosen the old quartermaster to act as his aide during the battle, passing along orders and messages via comm. It was rare that Twilight fought as a single unit, rare that it needed a strict hierarchy of communication. Howl had preferred to command such battles from the Thunderstrike, studying holographic maps of real-time battlefield data and allowing droids to send orders to Lieutenant Sirgon and the squads. But Hober knew Twilight intimately, and he had no more pressing duties. Namir was content with the old man and his own eyes. "How's everyone holding up?" Namir asked.
"For now?" Hober snorted. "They know their jobs. Ask me again after the fight."
Namir grunted and returned to observing the front. The Empire struck the first hammer blow of the battle. As one, a dozen airspeeders released miniature scatter bombs over Twilight's outer line. Explosives small enough not to imperil the facility, powerful enough to tear armor and skin. Namir saw 100 bright flashes among the rocks, pictured his friends pierced by shards of obsidian or deafened by the blasts. But the squads were sheltered and well hidden. The damage would be bearable. Two airspeeders plunged down in greasy black trails as Twilight missiles found their targets. Before the echoes of the bombs had faded, the Imperial infantry charged. It was only the foremost troops who surged upward, a test, Namir supposed, of Twilight's defenses. Red flashes licked the mountainsides, the company's middle line fired down at the assailants, doing little harm from such a distance. The outer line remained dormant until the charging troops were only a stone's throw away. Namir observed through the macro binoculars, saw white boots seek purchase on black stone and rifles sweep for targets, and gave the order.
"Open fire!"
He needn't have said anything. The outer line knew its duty. With the enemy so close, every blaster shot felled an Imperial soldier, sent a body tumbling down the slope. Crossfire tore stormtrooper squads apart, forced fleet troopers to seek shelter among the dead. Yet every blaster shot also gave away a Twilight soldier's hidden position. The mass of the Imperial forces, withheld from the charge, trained assault weapons and sniper rifles and cannons on the newly revealed opponents. Airspeeders swept in, evading plex-fired missiles as best they could, and scarring the mountain with cannon fire.
"Tell the outer line squads to break off as needed," Namir said. "Cede the territory, but do it slowly."
He heard Hober speak into his comlink, observed squads or surviving pairs or individuals peel off one by one and retreat to the middle line trench. He flinched when a Twilight soldier dragging a comrade's body was incinerated in the flash of an airspeeder's blasters. He reminded himself that this wasn't a guerrilla operation, but a pitched battle. Casualties would mount swiftly, and the losses so far were within an acceptable range. The Empire was acting carefully, rationally, neither overplaying its hand nor visibly underestimating its opponent. Predictability and caution were precisely what Namir had hoped for. He could drag out that sort of battle. No use regretting the cost now. The mass of the Imperial army began to advance. Volleys of particle bolts from Twilight's trench line slowed the attackers, forced them into cover as they crept up the slope meter by meter. They passed over positions abandoned by the outer line, and Namir squinted at the sudden blue-white flashes that ensued. The explosions of ion mines left over from the Mardona 3 mission, recovered from the Thunderstrike's wreckage. Traps wouldn't stop the Empire, but they would slow the enemy forces further. For long minutes, the battle seemed frozen. The advance proceeded imperceptibly gradually, like the movement of a shadow at dawn. Only when Namir forced himself to register the passing of time did he see the incremental changes at play. The Empire was closing in on the trench despite the rain of blaster bolts, and 100 fallen stormtroopers made no difference when more could follow. Yet the Empire did pause, perhaps 50 meters from the trench line. Namir didn't understand the decision until he saw the lower sections of the army part, making way for a dozen two-legged scout walkers that sprinted up the rocks. Only one was downed by artillery fire before making it to the trench. A second was caught in the blast of an ion mine. The others swiftly wreaked havoc among the troops. And Namir swore to himself as squads pulled into the open, evading the walkers only to be cut down by stormtroopers. "Tell the inner artillery units to fire! I want the walkers gone!" he said.
"What about the trench teams?"
Hober asked.
"They'll survive," Namir said.
"Some of them.
Order a withdrawal to the perimeter."
The artillery teams didn't hesitate. Namir was proud of them for that. Cannon fire streamed into the trench, followed by crackling plasma pulses and the trails of mortar rounds. Walkers screamed as metal buckled and cracked, and those that endured fled either down the slope or up toward the facility to their destruction. But the cost was high. Namir swept his macro binoculars across the rocks and saw whole squads burned and torn on the ground. How many of them had died under Twilight's own firepower instead of the walkers, he didn't dare guess. He adjusted the settings on the macro binoculars and studied the Imperial forces. The infantry was moving in to secure the swath of ground leading to the trench, but it wasn't yet making a final push toward the facility. That made sense. Regroup, reassess. So far as their commanders were concerned, time was on their side.
"I'm heading down," Namir said. "From here on in, we may as well watch in person."
The wounded were packed tight in Von Geis's makeshift field hospital, but they weren't so many that the facility cafeteria couldn't hold them. That didn't surprise Namir. The sort of combat taking place on the mountain didn't leave many wounds. It left people unscathed, or it left them dead. He warned Von Geis that the battle would be coming to the gate soon, and to keep a weapon close at hand. The old medic only nodded and went back to his patients. Outside, Twilight soldiers were huddled tight around the walls of the processing facility, taking cover behind jagged rocks and split boulders. Red particle blasts, suppressive salvos by Imperial troops, streaked over Namir's head as he walked the line. Often a Twilight soldier would return a quick volley down the mountainside or call in a location to a nearby sniper. Plex-armed anti-air gunners kept a wary eye on the sky, firing at any Imperial airspeeder that dared make a pass. Namir knew the gunners had to be running short on missiles, but there was no point conserving ammunition. The troops' mood seemed tense but not grim. Carver had somehow acquired an enemy's belt laden with grenades, and he grinned as he passed out bombs like holiday treats. Commander Tona, lacking a ship to captain, had organized the Thunderstrike's bridge crew into a team of runners carrying supplies to squads in need of water or fresh blaster packs. Along with the supplies, he bore boasts and challenges and obscene jibes from team to team, creating ad hoc competitions among the soldiers. Namir hadn't seen Gadrin, but word was he'd been singing in the trenches as the bombs fell. Occasionally, Namir stopped to speak with the men and women of the company. Corbo, the fresh meat who'd brought a knife to Chalice's airlock after Hadoral Prime, asked if the company was really fighting for the benefit of the Celestins. "The city under the mountain is in lockdown," Namir said. "Every stormtrooper out here is one who's not rounding up the locals."
"Good," Corbo said. "That's what I signed on for."
As one of Vifra's engineers updated Namir about the timetable for the next stage of the defense, Namir spied a figure skulking along among the ranks, her hands clasping an assault rifle behind her neck. He excused himself and hurried toward her.
"Twitch!"
Twitch pulled the rifle over her head, toyed with it in both hands.
"I'm not sorry," she said. "Had to go after my team."
She'd abandoned him in Pinyamba, raced off to save her scouts, who'd almost certainly been dead already.
"Forget it,"
Namir said.
"How'd you even get back?"
She shrugged. Her knuckles were scraped and her breath mask was covered in yellow dust, but she looked otherwise healthy.
"What's Twilight Company do best?"
she asked. Namir laughed. loud enough to draw glances from the squads nearby. He didn't mind. "Survive," he said. He could have stopped there, but it felt right to finish the sentiment. Whatever meat grinder we walk into, win or lose. Twilight Company. Howl's Twilight Company. Always survives. "Damn right," Twitch muttered, and resumed her aimless march. Yells of approval rose from nearby. Namir was glad to see Twitch alive. He tried not to wonder about Gadrin. Counting the dead could wait. He continued his rounds, chatting about tactics or long-lost friends or Celestine weather along the way. He felt at ease, as if he were in the clubhouse, watching debates and laughter and card games. He hoped the company shared that sense. Eventually, the suppressive salvos increased in speed, but the airspeeders held back. He checked his rifle's power levels and returned to Hober's side, looking up into the dreary gray Celestine sky. At the limits of his vision, he made out a wedge-shaped shadow among the clouds, ever so slowly increasing in size. "They're coming for us," he said, and smiled grimly. He spoke so only Hober could hear. "Who needs airspeeders when you've got a Star Destroyer?" Hober nodded slowly.
"Do we pull inside?"
"Not yet," Namir said. "I talked to the engineers. Just a little longer now. But do call our friends upstairs." The streams of blaster bolts overhead intensified. Namir pulled Hober into a crouch and watched the squad steadily return fire. A calm, unembellished exhilaration began to fill him. He'd been off the front lines for too long. And live or die, the battle felt right.